360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Well, good morning, and listen, you are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. Oh, I'm off to a flying start already, confusing my words. And joining me in the studio this morning, the opposition leader, Leah Fenocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie, and good morning, listeners.
We've got Natasha Files, the Attorney General. Good morning to you.
Morning, Wolfie.
And we've got Jerry Wood, the independent member for Nelson, and he's got something with him this morning.
Round one. It's
Christmas in June.
He's got a little bell. I'm assuming, Jerry, that you're going to sound that bell when you feel that it's your turn to talk.
Yes. Jed's Fish and Chip Shop.
Why would you think you need to do that?
Oh, well, you know, Jed's Fish and Chip Shop, who listened to this program.
Do they? Yeah.
Enjoyed it last time. And I thought, I looked on the agenda for today and I saw who was coming. I thought, well.
What do you mean?
I think there's an opportune time to bring the bell back.
Come on now. We're
going to
gang up
on
you now.
Mate,
I just thought I could get,
like,
you know, 30 seconds in here every now and then.
Say good morning. Yes. We're already.
You're sitting between us. So.
I love it, Jerry. What a great thing to do. That's hilarious. Well, I tell you what, let's get straight into it. There is so much going on, but I just want to take you to some incidents of violence which occurred in the city overnight. Two people have been seriously injured in Darwin City overnight. At around 8:30, police received a call that a man had been assaulted with a steel pole on Lindsay Street. Police and paramedics attended and the man was taken to RDH, Royal Darwin Hospital, with multiple depressed skull fractures. A short time later, a second male was located with a stab wound on Smith Street. A female was also located with a cut to her hand. They were both taken to Royal Darwin Hospital and police say it's too early to determine if those incidents are linked, and those investigations are continuing. But I tell you what, it's always pretty horrifying to hear of stories like this in our very own city, especially when you're talking about two people being seriously injured.
Unacceptable behaviour, Katie, and thank our police and our first responders who have acted quickly to support these people. Obviously, not knowing the background or the circumstances will allow those processes to go forward, but it is unacceptable, and through COVID we've seen our community come together and be safer, and we don't want to suddenly turn our back on that. We need to stick together as a community, so allow the investigations to take place, but disappointing.
Yeah, it's pretty scary stuff. I mean, excuse me. You know, the territory should be a safe place. And again, without knowing the detail, it's still pretty horrific news to hear this morning.
Absolutely. I heard somebody got bashed over the head with a steel bar. And but you have to wonder, you know, what was the what were the reasons? And obviously, people are not so sure. But you had St. John's Ambulance on this week, I think it was, and they said that there have all of a sudden been an increase in the number of incidences they had to attend to. So can one put a relationship with the easing off of the COVID-19 restrictions to the changes? Because are we going back to the old normal, not the new normal?
And
the old normal was that the Mitchell Street at times has been a place where violence has occurred, and alcohol is related to that. So I hope it's not that, but that's the old normal. And sometimes we sort of don't want to raise the issue about alcohol because so much many people enjoy having a beer or two, but be interesting to know whether that were the reasons for the violence last night.
Yeah, and I guess time will tell. And like we've all said, we really don't have that detail yet from the Northern Territory Police, but no doubt as those investigations get underway, we'll begin to learn more. But Filesy, I am interested to hear from you as the Health Minister, have you seen out at Royal Darwin Hospital over the last couple of weeks as those restrictions have eased, has there been a bit of a change to the number of presentations, particularly alcohol-related presentation?
So, Katie, we certainly saw a decline in presentations across the board, and we also saw a decline in flu cases and the common colds and things through COVID. So those physical distancing measures that were put in place to protect us from coronavirus have also had a positive impact in relation to other healthcare. We did see Royal Darwin Hospital quite busy last weekend, and so disappointing that we've seen that. Too early to pinpoint exactly what the cases were, but we know that alcohol and alcohol-fueled violence is unacceptable. We've put in place a range of measures. I met with the AHA earlier this week, and businesses don't want this happening on their streets. They put in place lots of measures. They work with us as a government to keep those policies in place so we have a safe, vibrant community. So it's really disappointing not knowing what happened specifically with these incidents last night, but we have seen that those presentations, we've seen a decline in alcohol-related presentations with the measures that we've put in place, but we did see with those easing of restrictions last weekend, people out and about, the hospital was busier.
Yeah, and even over the last few days, we've sort of started to hear more stories of different things that the police have been called out to. I mean, even yesterday while we were on air, we had one of our listeners, Steve, call through and say that he was out near Casuarina and people were, the police had had to pull over and arrest some blokes that were on the sidewalk. They'd apparently been involved in an unlawful entry in Ludmilla, I believe it was. So these are the types of stories that we're starting to hear again. It's really unfortunate. I think that when we had that lockdown, we certainly saw a decline, or it felt like there was a real decline in the number of those kind of incidents, police-related, you know, where police were having to go out to different things. They seem to be on the decline. Whether there's actual data to support that or not, I don't know. But I really hope that we don't go back to, like you dubbed it there, Gerry, the old normal.
Well, the biosecurity borders have been opened up as well, and I understand from people that I've been talking to that, of course, there's been a lot of money around as well from the JobKeeper allowance, and people are accessing the superannuation. So there are what we think are benefits for people out of unemployed, and benefits to keep people having money to buy goods and services may have some negative effects in some cases. So, you know, whether those things are related, I don't know. But I know that there has been some issues in relation to money sort of just being burnt, you might say, because there's an opportunity to, for extra money coming in.
And if there is an increase in you know, incidences of violence or crime or whatever it might be, and it's related to alcohol, I think it then gives us an opportunity to reflect on whether or not things like the banned drinker register and the floor price and some of the other initiatives
the
government
that
have brought in. Oh, didn't take you long, Natasha, to get all.
Just pointing out the obvious. You've said it many times on this show, Leah, that you'll scrap the BDR, you'll scrap the floor price.
From the queen of the, what do you call it? What do you always say? The evidence-based approach. From the queen of the evidence-based approach, perhaps you could get your people to crunch up the numbers and suss out how the evidence is going for you and whether or not your alcohol
reforms have actually made any difference
whatsoever.
We've seen a decrease in alcohol-related assaults, alcohol-related ED presentations. Professionals such as the Royal College of Surgeons, Katie, they welcome these measures because they're dealing with less alcohol fuel incidents in the hospitals, police are dealing with less, and we know the CLP will scrap them.
So do we just keep everyone in isolation forever? Then we'll solve all of our problems. I don't think
it's
that's going to work. Hey, let's keep talking about the borders. Gerry, you mentioned those biosecurity zones. Well, obviously they've lifted, but the one thing that we still don't know when they're going to lift is the state borders or the territory borders and the other states. And throughout the week, we obviously heard from, Business SA, who were on the show yesterday, and they said, well, should we realistically look at that South Australia Northern Territory triangle, included in that would be Western Australia as well. Should we look at lifting those borders and doing it in such a way that we're doing it at this point in time with other states that are actually going quite well when it comes to flattening the curve?
Well, I think if you brought it in stages, and I think what we're hearing from the NT government is that they're going to allow people to stay in their own caravans from next week.
Yep.
Now, I think that's a good thing. The only thing I would say is that what sort of caravan have you got? Because my understanding, if you're going to self-isolate in your own caravan, then you've basically got to have your own toilet and showers.
Gerry, just to interrupt you, because I interrupted Leah, so I'll play fair. With that, people, if they have their own shower and their own toilet in their van, that's okay. But we also would allow a situation where if people were at a caravan park that had a COVID plan, they could use shared facilities. Obviously, it's difficult, but it might be that they book in times for their shower and they have to be cleaned post that. So,
well, that'd be good because up to now you weren't allowed to do that.
Mm.
But what I would hope is that there's a good opportunity for caravan parks. Have a fortnightly special to attract people in. So not the normal rates, because my caravan park out at Howard Springs has got 3 visitors.
Wow.
The rest, the few there, I think 5 or 6 are permanent,
yep.
And that's all that's there. So
that's
here's,
really
an opportunity,
tough.
Here's an opportunity, I think, for caravan park owners to say, right, let's have a deal.
Mm.
It's a pity we can't use the $200 voucher for those people. That'd help as well. But see if we can get people in by have some attractive ways of doing things. I presume, and Natasha might be able to tell me whether I'm wrong here, but you still can't go out and get food in the shopping centre if you're self-isolating on the caravan park. But you could have an arrangement with the owners, for instance, that they will go and do the shopping for
yep.
them, and that'd be built into the package. So, you know, I think that we've got to promote this and get these places like the caravan parks up and running.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about those vouchers in just a couple of moments. But we do know today, for example, the National Cabinet is due to meet, and as I understand it, the Prime Minister is expected to ask our leaders to outline their plans to reopen the borders today within that National Cabinet meeting. You know, we've spoken about this on so many occasions. To be honest, we're starting to all sound like broken records talking about the borders opening. But it's reached a point where realistically the pressure is on now from every angle. You know, you've got the Prime Minister really putting that pressure on, I would suspect, on all of our state leaders and our Northern Territory and ACT leaders to make sure that there is a plan in place so that people know exactly how this is going to roll out.
So, Katie, we acted early to save the lives of Territorians, and Territorians have done a fantastic job, and we didn't get community transmission. We've had no deaths, and we certainly have been the envy of the nation. I had a meeting with State and Territory and the Federal Health Minister last night. Professor Brendan Murphy briefed us. And it's been very interesting to see what has happened across the borders, because that's what we've been watching and waiting on. New South Wales hasn't had community transmission for some days. Their cases have all been international travellers returning into Australia and being in quarantine.
What's Brendan Murphy's advice at this point?
So Brendan Murphy is that we need to be very cautious, that we are seeing second waves overseas, that we need to make sure we protect the population. But what we've seen, none of us thought we'd be in this situation just a few months down the track, particularly with a big jurisdiction like New South Wales, and we congratulated them. So we are watching very closely across the borders what's happening. We saw one case come out of those rallies in Victoria, one diagnosed case of coronavirus. But I think that, you know, following a 10-day or so period from that, it'll give us a really clear picture.
How long are we going to be waiting, do you think, Leah?
Oh, look, I think that this government is terrified to make a decision on this issue. I mean, there's no doubt that Territorians are concerned about the borders reopening and what that means to health outcomes. But I think that's because the Territory government is not communicating with people clearly enough about what we are working towards. I don't think people understand what the outcome is. Is it that we're looking, you know, is the Chief Minister waiting for the nation to have 0 cases? Is it... What are the metrics? What is the milestones that when they are achieved, he will make this decision? Because people need to know, and businesses need to plan for it. Whenever I've been talking to caravan park or tourism operators in the last few weeks, they've been saying they're receiving a lot of phone calls, particularly from those grey nomads, around wanting to come to the Territory and being ready to come. Certainly many people, and you know, Katie, we've talked about it a lot,
yep.
have come up with lots of different ways in which borders could reopen. It doesn't have to be just a wholesale, all right, we're
free
open for business. You know, it could be very targeted.
Yeah,
it could...
look, I don't mind if we don't let the New South Welshmen and the Victorians in if they've still got cases of coronavirus. I'll be very blunt there.
But, Katie, the problem in terms of opening the borders and picking and choosing our favourite states is...
Well, it's more based on who's the healthiest.
Wouldn't it be based on the evidence?
So, but in terms of the Northern Territory, we shut those borders to save the lives of Territorians. We've given our health professionals time to prepare, and that the testing numbers, we've tested over 1,200 last week, and it's a similar number this week, I'm advised, and that's up significantly, the number of tests taking place. But the South Australia into Victorian border, so people say, why can't we open up to South Australia? That border is so porous. There's hundreds of spots where people can travel, so it's the risk of that seepage of cases. But what I can say is it's really promising, the lack of transmission in other states and territories. The Chief Minister has said from mid-June he'll be assessing that weekly, and mid-June is Monday.
Coming days?
We will be assessing this very closely, but I think it's promising signs, that lack of community transmission interstate.
Monday? I just think...
Monday, are we expecting an announcement?
Katie?
Today, after the National Cabinet?
You'll have to ask the Chief Minister that. Is he on Monday?
He is on Monday.
There you go.
No, but Katie, in all seriousness, in terms of the restrictions ease a step this coming Monday, so yep. In terms of the quarantining.
I guess just to put it into perspective, and I know that everybody is in exactly the same boat here, and I guess, without putting too fine a point on it, I know that there's so many different events that are wondering if they are going to be able to go ahead, and if they can go ahead, how, and whether they're going to need to, whether they're going to be in a situation where they'll be able to market to interstate visitors, or whether it's just going to be something that is only for locals. And a lot of that is obviously based on how quickly we know and how quickly that plan is. Now, that's talking about events. Then when you talk about, obviously, the tourism sector and different tourism businesses, they're wholly and solely reliant, obviously, on those visitors. And if they've got a plan in terms of, all right, well, in a month's time it's going to happen, then they're able to start that marketing, and they're able to start marketing us to the rest of Australia in such a way that we then become, hopefully, for the first time in a while, because let's be honest, we've been battling this, this sort of marketing the territory to everywhere else. We're battling with the other states. If we can get a bit of a jump here, say we're the safest place in the world, we're the most beautiful place in the world, there's all of these wonderful locations to visit. If we're able to get a bit of a jump, it might be the boost that, that we all need.
I suppose I wonder whether we're getting to a point where we're too scared to take some risk. Now, we live in a world where there's risk, just crossing the road, there's a risk of you getting run over. So do you say, well, nobody should cross the road until there's no risk? But I think to some extent we've got to be able to be clever enough to say, look, we can handle the risk, whether South Australian border with Victoria is a bit porous or not. But South Australia hasn't had any cases for a long time. And look at ways that we can monitor, because we're not saying necessarily a breakdown here. We're going to cause a wave. It could cause, as I say, a spike. So how can we monitor that spike if it comes? How can we check people if they come into the territory, if we have some doubts about their health? But we can either close the place down until there's basically no risk, or we say, look, we now need to have a balance between the health of the community and the economic health, which is also the health of many people as well, that mental health of having a job, of not going broke. I think we've got to be sometime brave enough to say, look, we've got a plan in place that if something happens, we deal with that. But let's start to change. Let's bring in people.
I think the rhetoric around this, three months ago, we were seeing.
I need the bell, Jerry.
This bell is only when I want to speak. There is a small payment if anyone else wants to use it.
I don't think the government is really actually trying to find a solution.
You talk about
a porous border between Victoria and South Australia. Wouldn't you check the driver's license when they come across, and if they're from Victoria, you're from Victoria.
It's not about where their driver's license shows they're from.
I think some of this stuff is a little bit, interesting. And the government isn't talking about, is there risk? I mean, you mentioned earlier, Natasha, you said we had to wait until our health system was ready. Are we ready?
It just shows how incompetent the CLP is to govern. The fact that had briefings all the way along from the Territory Controller and from the Chief Executive of Health, it is around preparing, it's around the testing, it's around the tracing, and it's around watching what's happening interstate.
Are we prepared?
Absolutely. Our health professionals have worked hard.
Our health systems are prepared. So that's one measure. That's got to be one metric that the Chief Minister's looking at in assessing borders.
And I just outlined them again. I've said them quite openly for many, many weeks now around our preparation, the ability to test, the ability to track and trace, and also what's happening across the borders. And we cannot be complacent when you still see community transmission.
So the only bit that's left is what is happening across the borders. We as a jurisdiction are ready, but it's what other jurisdictions are doing.
We are going to talk more about that in just a couple of moments. moments, because one of the things that obviously is happening across the borders and also in the Northern Territory this weekend is the Black Lives Matter protests. So we're going to talk further about that in just a couple of moments.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
You are listening to The Week That Was, and joining me in the studio this morning, Leah Finocchiaro, Jerry Wood and Natasha Files. And I tell you what, the phone line is going off, particularly the text line. If you do want to send us a text, 0418 957 369. I've got one here that says, good morning, Katie. Wise words from Jerry Wood. We need to manage risk rather than fail in leadership because of political backlash. I've got another one here. It says, ban the protest or open the borders. This is getting too political. And look, we've got quite a few messages that have come through here this morning asking, Katie, can you please ask the panel whether they think the Black Lives Matter protest should go ahead tomorrow or not in Darwin? But look, I think it takes us to a broader discussion about the Black Lives Matter protests and the fact that they have happened all throughout Australia last weekend. We now know that one of those protesters, obviously in Melbourne, has tested positive to COVID-19. And the real concern here is that we end up with more people who were at that protest, obviously creating a cluster of people with coronavirus. I know that it's something that every leader, I think, around the nation will be keeping a very close eye on.
So, Katie, the rules that are in place are there and they apply to everyone. People need to keep their physical distance. They need to stay home if they are not feeling well, and they need to use their judgment if they are gathering in groups and larger numbers. This is, of course, a very important issue, and I don't think anyone denies that. We've been doing a lot of work, the Aboriginal Justice Agreement. There's some really positive steps in the Northern Territory. But in terms of this, the organisers have been in contact with the Department of Health. They're well aware of their obligations to keep our community safe. And as I said, those rules apply to everyone.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has come out and demanded an end to further Black Lives Matter protests, saying that some protests have been hijacked by left-wing movements and demonstrators at future events should be charged. He's previously urged Australians not to attend mass protests against Indigenous incarceration rates and deaths in custody, citing the risk of COVID-19. Look, we've spoken about this on numerous occasions throughout the week. I firmly believe that what people are protesting about and what we've seen is definitely worth protesting about, and it's something that I feel pretty passionately that, you know, we all, I think, in this studio would agree that Black Lives Matter. There is absolutely no doubt about that. My concern, though, is I think that I'd probably be personally being quite hypocritical if I said that I thought it was okay for there to be large mass gatherings at this point in time, even though I agree with the protests and agree with what they're doing, because, you know, the rest of us and absolutely everybody around Australia is trying to do the right thing in order to not spread the virus.
Well, Katie, there's two issues. One is having a protest,
yep.
And the other one is the issue of Indigenous people, deaths in custody and incarceration rates. And I've been on the record many times saying that I think that, you know, we need to find ways of working solutions to this problem. It's not simple. Unfortunately, sometimes protests simplify
yep.
complex matters, and they are complex matters. And I've been around a fair while. This issue has, you know, been ongoing. People have tried various ways of solving it. It's something we can't stop trying to deal with and fix, because it is a blight on our society. But there are reasons why it's happened. It's not simple. And you need to be careful that we don't just have a slogan or yell something out without having a solution to something that is more complex than sometimes people think. But in relation to, and that's a discussion we should have, but in relation to having a protest, in the Territory, we know we have no coronavirus. I heard one of the organisers saying, well, Mitchell Street was all packed the other night, therefore we should be able to do it. I'm not sure you can argue, because one group did something, you should have do the same. But I would hope that in the Territory, we should be able to do a protest that is done according to the rules. And the rules are that if you're over 500, you have to get a plan approved by the Chief Health Officer. I would have thought that's the basic thing. But I just quickly say, you know, sometimes I think silent protests make more than noisy ones. And last night at the football, both Collingwood and Richmond knelt on one knee, and the umpires at the beginning of the game, for 30 seconds, and there was a little statement made. Sometimes that is more impressive, you might say, or more brings the point home more than sometimes the big protests.
Yeah, look, and Jerry's right. There are two issues here. One is, you know, obviously that Aboriginal people are overrepresented in our justice system, and the other is the right to be able to protest. And I mean, you know, we value that right that we have in this country, and so it's important people can voice their concerns about whatever it is that might be. But it's encouraging that Natasha has said that you know, the health department and government have been involved around what restrictions and what limitations there are to being able to gather en masse. Obviously, we've had this, well, we have a global pandemic, and the Territory has done a fantastic job. So we're in a unique position where our risk is obviously much, much less than in other jurisdictions. But nonetheless, we're all still continuing to exercise the, you know, social distance, physical distancing and all of those other types of things.
So, Falsey, from your perspective as the Health Minister, is that okay to go ahead tomorrow, that protest? Is it okay for there to be a mass gathering of people?
So, Katie, it's an important issue and it's important to highlight that issue, but we cannot compromise the health and safety of Territorians. So we've worked hard to become the safest place in Australia and the world, and we need to keep it that way. So we've made sure that those organisers understand their obligations, and we also, those people that are concerned and thinking they might attend, also to understand their obligations of keeping that physical distancing in place around this event. And if people can look at other ways in which they can show their support. I mean, I think it was very moving what Jerry explained, you know, happened at the footy. And so perhaps that's another consideration that people can, wherever they are, can upload to social media their support. So it's complex. It's not to dismiss the issue, but it's, we don't want to undo that health work that's been done.
And look, the message there, the protest tomorrow, you know, is important.
Yep.
But you've got a better chance of winning people's on side if you have the protest according to what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
If you deliberately flout the rules, and you might say, well, other people have done it, so why not us? Then other people will say, well, I'm going to flout the rules as well. But also, are they going to listen to the protest, or are they going to complain about the behaviour?
Yeah.
So I think if this protest is well organised, and people, I heard the young lady this morning, and yep, she sounded very sincere about what she's trying to do with, you know, the process they're trying to put in place, but that's the way then they show that people are sincere. So it's not just about saying, you know, stick my finger up at the authority.
Mm.
We're saying, no, we've got a problem here. We are serious about it, and we will show that we are have a mature debate, and
yep,
we'll do that through the protest that we're having tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think that's the real difficulty at this point in time is that, you know, I totally understand and agree with why they are having that protest, and I think it's a really important thing to do. But what really worries me is that you're going to see a bit of a divide in the community at this point in time where everybody that doesn't attend the protest, it starts to say, well, if we then have a spread of COVID-19, you know, they end up blaming the people that have gone to the Black Lives Matter protests around the nation. And if you then end up with a cluster of people with coronavirus because they have attended there, and we then end up with further lockdowns, it's really going to defeat the whole reason why they are out there protesting. And it's going to, you know, it's going to make a lot of people very upset.
Well, especially as we've had so many months where the biosecurity board has been in. And what's the reason? The simple reason was that Aboriginal people are more susceptible to this virus, and the community as a whole wishes to protect those people from that virus. And so if it looks like people aren't going to take that seriously when it comes to keeping social distancing, then people are going to say, well, what was all this about in the first place? So I think it needs a mature approach, not something that's heated and loses track of what this actual protest is actually really about.
And Falsey, from the discussions that you had yesterday with the other health ministers and the Chief Health Officer for Australia, Brendan Murphy, are they waiting to see what happens as a result of these protests?
So interstate, we've already seen one diagnosed case in Victoria that attended the events there last weekend, and so we need to now see what happens in terms of, was contact with other people at that event causing a spread? So coming back here to the Territory, I think it's a really important issue, but we need Territorians to exercise their judgment, to practice that physical distancing, to to stay smart and stay safe.
So do you support that protest going ahead tomorrow? That, you know, given the fact that it is a mass gathering and everybody else is being told that it's not okay to have mass gatherings unless you've got a COVID plan in place?
It's a really important topic, and I think here in the Territory, more than any other jurisdiction, we understand. We've been doing a lot of work around the Aboriginal Justice Agreement, listening to Aboriginal Territorians, having a role in leadership. We have reached out. The rules are, you know, around a COVID management plan. If your gathering is less than 500 people, we've been in contact with those organisers so they fully understand the rules, and we expect them and Territorians to abide by it.
So if there are more than 500 people there and if they're in close proximity tomorrow, are the police going to be patrolling and are they going to end up arrested?
So police, of course, are well aware that there's an event being organised, and authorities, council authorities and environmental health are aware, and so we've been working with the organisers so that they can fully understand and make sure that people wishing to attend their event understand the compliance that they have to participate in.
So yes or no, do you support?
This issue, I support it, and I've shown that through the work that I've done with the Aboriginal Justice Agreement and allowing that to have a voice and to have a process. In terms of mass gatherings, no. As the Health Minister, you know, we shouldn't be gathering in large groups. We should be trying to stay as much as we can within our bubbles. We've seen the significant easing of restrictions in the Northern Territory well ahead the rest of Australia, which has allowed people to get back to work. It's allowed us to have those social events, but we do need to be very careful.
I think the question really is, if it is more than 500, will a plan be approved?
Well, and then I guess, I mean, I don't know whether they're even, you know, whether the organisers are even thinking that there's going to be more than 500 or whether they've put a plan in place for that. It's, and I don't know. We have put in a request earlier in the week to have those, to have the organisers on, and we will see. If we're able to get them on the show throughout the morning, I'd like to hear from them. But I don't know, Gerry. It's going to be interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, surely those rules would have to be followed. I mean, they're there for everyone. Businesses are having to comply with those rules. Sporting groups are doing it. So, you know, it has to comply with whatever the requirements are for whatever the size
it is. It should apply to all.
Yep.
I mean, otherwise we just have a society where it's okay for you but not okay for you.
Yeah, well, and that's risk we run, isn't it?
That's right.
You know, I think that everybody can agree that I don't think anybody's saying here that it's not okay. If it was normal times, it's not, you know, it's absolutely okay to have a protest if it's a normal situation, but the whole of Australia is locked down at the moment
and we are in a better situation. Yeah. We haven't got any coronavirus, but the point is that the government has still set rules. We're still within a coronavirus regulations. Now, if they get changed, fair enough, but they're not changed. So while they're there, as a society, we are working together and we should all abide by those rules.
That's right. Yeah. And if there are certain, you know, things that are able to happen without those rules in place, then I guess it's open to everybody.
Absolutely.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It's Friday morning. In the studio with us this morning, we've got Leah Finocchiaro, Gerry Wood and Natasha Files. And I tell you what, plenty happening throughout the week. I do just want to have a discussion, though, about the fact that we know the Northern Territory Government have announced that there's going to be a voucher scheme for travel, essentially. So, or not travel, but for the tourism industry is the better way of putting it. So the government announced that tourism voucher scheme to encourage Territorians to explore the Territory and support local tourism businesses until those borders can safely reopen to interstate visitors. Now, it is obviously a good thing for our tourism sector that there's going to be a bit of a stopgap, but I think that realistically, that is going to be what it is at this point in time.
I'm really worried about this scheme, Katie, not because it's not a good scheme, and let's face it, we've been talking about this for months. It started with a hospitality-type voucher, and now it's eventuated into a tourism voucher. So we're months down the track of when industry, businesses, individuals and everyone has been calling on government to do this. So there's no question around the move. My issue and serious concern is this a tradie scheme Mark II? You know, are they going to botch the rollout and implementation of this, like we've seen with the home improvement scheme, which has locked up work? Again, we've got an announcement yesterday, but no implementation until the 1st of July, which is over 2 weeks away, which means have Territorians, or will Territorians who were going to go and spend the weekend down the track or whatever it is they might have been doing, are they now going to pull out their bookings, pull out their plans and save it for after that 1 July period so that they can access the scheme, which, again, not criticising Territorians for that, but will that be one of the consequences, in which case for the next 2 weeks are we going to have operators struggling even more than they already were?
I hope not.
Katie, last weekend so many Territorians got out, they saw their own backyard, people that had never been camping. Even one of my colleagues, Nicole Madison, who's not ever been a fan of camping and she knows her, but she was so inspired by watching everyone get out and about. The Katherine region was bustling, so we know that every dollar spent at these tourism, you know, the accommodation, the food, the tourism operators is jobs. And so this scheme is designed to really encourage Territorians to get out to see their own backyard. So 26,000 vouchers worth $200 from July 1st will roll out territory-wide. There can be stay and meal packages, so places such as the waterfront
but
can
has the government learnt from the home improvement scheme, and are you ready for this scheme? How is it going to be rolled out? You know, what have you put in place to mitigate this issue of people pulling out their bookings over the next 2 weeks? I mean, the home improvement scheme is still causing a lot of chaos for tradies who've got work locked up in something that is just not flowing. I mean, the tourism industry don't need any more pain than they've already got. Has the government learnt from what the way they've rolled this out?
This is in response to the tourism sector. We know that they've done it particularly tough through COVID, and so we're confident that Territorians will not only get out this weekend and the coming weekends in June, that they'll then think further beyond that and look at extending where they can go and what they can do to spend more money to keep people in jobs.
Hey, Jerry!
You've only had to use it once.
Yep, my turn. Two things. The marketing campaign is going to have this logo, Never Have I Ever, and you've got to fill in the rest. Now, I think
I pointed this out yesterday. That used to be a drinking game, Never Have I Ever.
Mix 104.9 should, I think, have a competition for a big meat tray. See what the next couple of words are going to be. I think you'd get some pretty interesting results. But look, I'm not saying it's not a good scheme. It's called the Tourism Voucher Scheme. And as I said before, a lot of our tourist places, caravan parks, etc., are struggling. My question is purely an economic one.
Yep.
We're going to spend $5.2 million. One of the problems we've got at the moment leading up to this election is the budget.
Yep.
So where does this money come from? Is it new money?
Good
or is
question.
It taken from other programs that the government's got going? I've been approached by a person recently who said, well, the money they've put into the home stimulus plan, the $100 million, has come from some other program.
I'm not sure if that's the case.
We don't have an estimates committee to ask that.
Yes.
But we don't have anything.
You've got PAC next week. Will we get any budget questions? That's the real question. You should get more organised. But I think it's important. We can say it's a great scheme. Fine. It's got to be paid for.
That's exactly right. Where has that money come from?
Yeah,
and I think that's, you know, Jerry, you've raised a very good point, and it's certainly a point that is not lost on anybody in this studio or anybody who listens to this show. We've spoken about the budget on numerous occasions. We have asked and asked when we are going to have a clearer idea of the Northern Territory's budget and how we're looking before we go to the polls on August 22. Now, we're told that we are going to have, I thought there was going to be some further information revealed, but I don't think it was until July. Filesy, you might be able to reveal that. But look, I just think this is so incredibly important because, like you said, Jerry, I don't think anybody would argue that we all want to do everything that we can to try and help our fellow Territorians, particularly when you talk about the tourism industry, when you talk about the construction industry, every industry. If I can go out and buy a feed and it means that I'm keeping somebody in a job, I will do it because I've still got a job.
Absolutely.
But we need to know how much money we've got. We need to make sure that money is not being spent willy-nilly on other things as well because we simply don't have a clue.
And that's why it's so important that the government deliver some form of budget. We recognise that there might be some challenges, but that does not absolve them from transparency on this budget issue. People deserve to know, what does our debt look like? What does our deficit look like? And what are the projections? What are our departmental over or underspends? What money has had to be moved to support the COVID response? How much was the COVID response? You know, what is the damage to our economy going forward? All of these questions are legitimate. All of these questions the government has answers to. All of these questions Territorians should be able to look at and assess. We know that coming into government in 2016, this government inherited a debt of $1.8 billion. It is now somewhere around the $7 billion mark. What did we get for five extra billion dollars is the $5 billion question, Katie. And this government can talk about saving lives and it can talk about all these other things, but ultimately, people are not silly. They know that this government has blown the books and they want to see the detail.
So, Katie, we have every month provided a public accounts committee process where people can ask questions. The Chief Minister has said ahead of the election that in July, at the end of July, he will release financial information. 70% of the Northern Territory government's budget comes from the federal government. They
but
have Falsy, delayed their
it's
budget.
It's a bit disingenuous to say that the public accounts committee have provided, you know, the detail that people are seeking.
As I understand it,
the public accounts committee has provided the detail into how, you know, some of the money is being spent in response to coronavirus. But, you know, the fact is we have not been in a great financial situation for some time now. So I think it's really, like, I think it's really imperative that the government does just let people know how things are looking, warts and all, and they can make up their own minds
come
August 22.
Tasmania were able to provide solid information. Queensland are going to the polls this year. They're doing a mini budget. This government's obviously got something pretty bad to hide if they're not going to be open with Territorians about it.
We have all these other departments in the government, primary industry, families, all those other departments. We need to look at their budgets and how they've come up. For instance, what happens each year is that they have a projected budget. We need to see what the actual spending was. And that's normally part of the estimates committee. Now, we won't see that. Now, we know that health will be affected and police will be affected because that's where a lot of the money's been spent. Has that affected the other departments? Have they had a drop in their budget? And if so, what has that affected?
Yep.
Now, they're the sort of questions we need to know.
Yes.
And that's good, good governance, that they're able to explain where the budget is at this stage and what effect has it had on each department. So we know where things are.
Have we had to borrow more? You know, all of these questions.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Well, I almost forgot we needed to talk then. I am joined in the studio by Leah Finocchiaro, Jerry Wood and Natasha Files. Look, there has been a lot up for discussion this morning. I do just want to talk about very quickly the JobKeeper figures, because the Northern Territory News has reported this morning that the coronavirus pandemic has crippled Darwin's northern suburbs more than anywhere else in the Northern Territory, with the Red Centre not far behind. So the new Federal Treasury data shows there are more workers on JobKeeper within the 0810 postcode, which includes Nightcliff, Wongaree and Casuarina, than anywhere else in the Northern Territory. And there are 755 businesses on the federal government scheme in the postcode. Suburbs in the immediate outskirts of the CBD that fall into the 0820 postcode, including Larrakia, Cullen Bay and Perrap, are the next worst, with 732 businesses signing up for the JobKeeper. So, look, I guess it highlights as well, to me, the situation that we are going to find ourselves in, I think, come September, when I believe that JobKeeper runs out. And I think that what it really highlights is that, you know, for a lot of businesses, they are very much reliant on this at this point in time, and it's going to have a big impact when it ends.
And that's why it's so important that this government take immediate action on the economy. I mean, they need to take immediate action on the economy. We have had the worst performing economy year on year under this Labor government, and now we've got the Chief Minister devolving responsibility of the Cabinet to the Reconstruction Commission, who will not report until November. Now, the government is the government today. The Chief Minister is the Chief Minister today, and he needs to be sitting down with his Cabinet team and doing everything they can to ensure economic prosperity here in the Territory, to pull the levers that are going to mean more jobs and opportunity into the future.
Filesy.
And, you know, September, that date is coming.
We're running out of time, Filesy.
Territorians know that as a government, we've thrown everything at it from a health perspective and everything at it from an economic perspective. We know many Territorians are doing it extremely tough. And we know that this health crisis, which has caused the economic crisis, and the economic crisis will go on for a long time to come.
Yeah, and it's going to be really tough for people.
Well, I raised something last week and it didn't get much of a focus in your last Friday's
episode.
About the Masters Games
episode.
Being opened up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, people sort of Hare said, oh, well, you know, can't do it. There won't be many teams. But the whole idea of that was not just about the Masters. It was about allowing businesses to
continue
down the track or within Alice Springs.
Yep.
And it got hoo-hard. And then I find out, after I'd been on, put out the press release, that the government has paid for all the towels and the backpacks for this year's Masters. But the thing is, if JobKeeper finishes in September, the Masters would be in October. Why Lauren Moss, the minister, can't go down and have a simplified version of the Masters, a bit like what's going to happen with the Olympics next year. They're not going to have all the fanfare. They've said that announced that. Why can't we just have a simple games down there without all the fanfare?
I agree.
And that would be some little help to the businesses, especially in Alice Springs. People will go out to restaurants, people will enjoy themselves.
We could take the week that was on the road.
Absolutely.
We could have
a
real
team. You need to compete, Katie.
That's right.
Can I just say...
a little thing, but I think... why would you just say, oh, no, it's no good, there's only a few teams? Well, those teams can play all week.
It
doesn't matter. It's going to be a bit of fun and games.
We're going to have to wrap up. Sorry,
Natasha, I've got to pull you up there. The health crisis did not create the economic crisis. We were in economic crisis before COVID hit. We went into COVID week, courtesy of your government. And so you guys can hide behind COVID all you like. You can blame COVID for no budget. But I'm sorry, territories have been hurting for a long time, courtesy of the Gunner Labor government. And for you guys to blame COVID is shameful.
We're going to have to wrap up. It's only 1 minute away from 10 o'clock. Leah Finocchiaro, opposition leader. Always good to have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely weekend, everybody.
You too. Gerry Wood, the independent member for Nelson. Thanks,
Katie. But look, I've got to congratulate Noel Pageant-Fury for...
That was an important announcement.
It wasn't to shut me
up.
For the independent member for Nelson, for getting a Order of Australia medal.
Wonderful.
And so coming from another independent, and hopefully another independent takes over after the next election, I'd say well done.
Good on you, Gerry. And Natasha Files, the Attorney General and Health Minister and member for Nightcliff.
Thanks, Wolfie.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360.